From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we are the Forum for the Fans, the Bleed Blue Show, Knickerbocker Avenue Fan Forum, talking Kevin Knox, Courtney Lee, a couple of two teams later on in the NBA Pick'ems. BleedBlueShow.com is our website, of course, and the audio archive. Episodes can be found on your iTunes, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, and your Stitcher apps. It's been a fun week, man, talking sports, getting back to the swing of things. Earlier this week, we had the Blues Day recap, talking all sports, NFL, NCAA football, baseball, the playoff chase and that. So check that out when you have the chance. And, of course, last evening's episode, the Rank Podcast with Ranger Proud, we talked oh, I'm getting a brain fart. Oh, yeah, Jimmy VC, Mika Zibanejad, a little bit of thoughts on the Vegas Golden Knights and the New York Islanders. So that episode is out there as well. And last and certainly, but definitely not the least, so the Big Blue Roundtable will be Thursday, 7 p.m. And, of course, the preview versus the Jacksonville Jaguars. So the Knickerbocker Avenue Fan Forum, Kevin Knox, Courtney Lee. NBA, I think the NBA is about a little over a month away. Look at, man, time flies. This is crazy. So without further ado, let's talk some Knicks basketball, man. The honorable one himself, man, the guy of this platform, Knickerbocker Avenue himself, Bleed Blue Show, Knickerbocker Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and also on Instagram. Av, it's been a while, man. It's been a couple of weeks, man. Welcome back to your platform, man. Knicks basketball. How's everything, bro?
Well, thank you very much, Steve. I hope you enjoyed your island hopping vacation. I saw some of the pics. That looked like a lot of fun, but I know it was hot as hell down there, wasn't it?
No, not too bad, man. It was cool though. Good times, man. It's always good to get away, man. Kind of like how it's always like when you went on vacation last year? And it's always good for people to do things and do things fun, man. Get away, get escape. What's going on with you, man? Knicks basketball, man. What's up with you, man?
Well, so far so good. I mean, it's relatively quiet, unless you consider Kevin Knox signing with Puma, big major news. But I mean, with training camp about three, four weeks away, for the first preseason game coming up, it's kind of interesting, to get away from it for about a week or two, and then to come back, have new perspective, new mindset on it, and there are things to get excited about, especially since we're talking about the rookie Kevin Knox. Everyone's really jumping for joy and really optimistic, considering his summer league performance, considering every little highlight reel and every little workout that video that he does put out there. So far, there's a lot of reason to be excited, but the views are not going to change. I mean, the views of the real Knicks fans and the real knowledgeable Knicks fans, especially the ones on this platform, will tell you there's a huge upside if he pans out. And I mean, then there could be another one of those draft busts. It's perfectly possible for it to happen. We're just hoping for it not to happen. We're hoping, that he far exceeds the expectations. I mean, you talk about Kevin Knox, 6'7", 6'8". About 220, 230 pounds, give or take. Does need to bulk up a little bit more. Needs to work on, on becoming stronger, especially if he's going to be playing the three in today's NBA. I think he needs to work a little bit more on his shot. He definitely needs to pick up on his defense, which is something that that we all harped on when the Knicks made a selection. Anybody who booed the selection would tell you Kevin Knox is. He's a pretty good offensive player, but he lacks, confidence in defense. He lacks effort on the defensive end. He can do it. He showed you a little bit on the summer league, but that's summer league. You take that with a grain of salt. Now when you start talking about the NBA and you're talking about some of the everyday threes and some of the elite threes in the NBA, you have to you know, it's not fair to compare him to that, but that's what he's going to go up against. He's going to go up against the LeBrons. He's going to go up against the, you know, the KDs of the world. He's going to, you know, he's going to be fighting time with, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee, you know, just for that starting spot, especially on the Knicks. You know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, he's going to get the opportunity now. It's good, you know, definitely with Porzingis, you know, missing the, you know, the major bulk load of the season, you know, recovering from the ACL. However, this is his time. I mean, it's you know, now's a good time of that, you know, than ever for him to kind of like set the tone for what the Knicks and the Knicks fans can expect from. And it's only up to him if he puts forth the effort. And, of course, David Fizdale gives him, you know, and allots him the appropriate time and provide him the necessary guidance, because that was one thing that the Knicks, as an organization, as a team, have been lacking. Consistent coaching and actual, you know, tutelage and guidance. You know, forget the Jeff Hornacek era, forget the Phil Jackson era, forget the, you know, right before that, the Mike Woodson era. You now have an opportunity for both Kevin Knox and David Fizdale to kind of show themselves as like, all right, I'm going to showcase this young man's talent, and I'm going to give him the platform. He's going to make me look good. It's up to Knox, really. You know, it really does hang in the balance on him on whether the Knicks succeed
or not.
Think,
Hold on, man. Do you think you're putting a lot of too much pressure on Kevin Knox?
But you know what? I kind of have to, because who else are you going to rely on this? You know, you rely on the heavy bulk load on this team, on Tim Hardaway Jr.? You can't. It's not going to come from Frank Ntilikina. It's not going to come from the point guard position. It's not going to, I mean, don't expect some. I'm not expecting a repeat performance for Trey Burke or you know, or anything like that. But if it doesn't come from him, then you're talking about, you know, a possibly, you know, a walking double double out of Enes Kanter. That's given. Fact is that, you know, after a while, he's only going to hit 2 points. So Knox has to kind of like, between him and whoever's, you know, the starting point guard, whoever they may be, whether it's Burke, Moody, or Ntilikina, he has to kind of set that tone. And especially since if he's going to be the starting three, he has to be somewhat of a, especially in the early stages, he has to be, you know, the valuable second option if he's not the first one now. Mm-hmm. And then kind of ascend himself into that first option. All the way until Kristaps Porzingis comes back, because that's pretty much what all it hinges on, is when and where will Porzingis show his face. If we are blessed this season, with a unicorn sighting, then Knox can kind of like, you know, take a step backwards if he wants, you know, just kind of recoup himself and learn. But yes, a lot is going to be put on Kevin Knox's shoulders because of his scoring ability, because of the potential that Steve Mills and Scott Perry all highlighted in that lip service press conference that we heard about a month or two ago. And it really does. I mean, it's on his shoulders a lot. Yes, you're expecting a lot from Ntilikina. You're expecting an improvement from Moutier. You're expecting more from Burke. And you're expecting a lot from Hardaway. You know,
Hold on. So let me get this straight. I mean, really, because what's realistic as far as expectations? Because if there's a lot, what kind of shooting percentage are we asking from the 2-point range or from the regular field goal? I would even look at the 3 points. Let's look at field goal percentage, the shot efficiency. Let's look at free throw percentage. What about scoring average? What about rebounding? Like, what barometer do you have him, or is as far as the expectations?
Well, I mean, you know, now that you said that, I'm putting a lot of effort on, you know, a lot of emphasis on him. I don't want to be,
yeah,
you know, I don't want to say he has to score 29 a night. No, I mean,
no way, dude.
Exactly. That's like really,
no,
you know, shooting for the moon here. I think what's reasonable is, you know, 15 a night, you know, points per game, playing, you know, 20 to 25 minutes. He's gonna be playing a lot of heavy minutes. Especially when Fizdale's going to be integrating Lee and Hardaway and Zonja all in that whole mix.
All right.
How many minutes, you said?
I didn't get that part. How many minutes?
About 20 to 25. 20 to 25 is reasonable now at this point. And, I mean, for a rookie, usually it's about 15 to 20 range, but because of the situation the Knicks are in, you know, they're somewhat in dire straits in a sense of, you know, scoring, just, you know, you can't rely on Hardaway all the time. Lee disappears. Enes Kanter can only do so much from down low, especially if they pull him up on defense, and that's, you know, that's a huge bulk load he's scoring on. So you really, and we don't know what kind of what Mario Hezonja we're gonna get. We don't know that. I don't know if he's gonna be revitalized now that he's in New York, or is he gonna be play a little bit of the same style that he played when he was in Orlando. So that's kind of like a big, you know, a big number of what ifs. So a lot of that, because of so many what ifs, the load comes on Kevin Knox a little bit more, especially since, you know, all this coverage on him and all this, you know, all the media attention when it comes to the Knicks. You're talking about Kevin Knox. You're not talking about Porzingis because he's injured. That's the reality. So, you know, 16 to 18 points a game, about 6 rebounds. You would hope.
Okay.
You would hope that he shifts within the you know, the 40s, the mid 40s. That's within reason. But I know that he's more of like a 30 something percent shooter from downtown, maybe less than that. But he can develop that, and, you know, throughout the course of an NBA season. And I mean, you're not playing defensive juggernauts every night, so you would hope that he would actually improve on those nights and put up a 35 or 40 spot, you know, on certain nights. But yeah, that's how I look at it with Kevin Knox. A lot is on his shoulders because Porzingis is not here.
I don't really look at it like that. I see why you're saying that as you're explaining it. I don't look at Kevin Knox's situation like that. He may say a lot of those right things, and I think the Knicks brass are going to give him a lot of green light. But I don't see him as this go-to guy like a lot of Knicks fans see him as. It would be great if he did deliver. When you say his scoring is going to be around 15 to 17 points, I think that's reasonable for a Kevin Knox, a guy who's been a perennial high school scorer. He didn't really have the green light like that in Kentucky because, as you already know, Kentucky is a bunch of blue chippers. You got to spread the ball around. So some nights it's going to be somebody else like Gillis Alexander. Some nights it's going to be Kevin Knox, so on and so forth on Kentucky. So we didn't get to see a lot of what he did at Kentucky. There were some games he kind of looked sloppy, turnovers. Like, for instance, for me, like, I look at the little things like turnovers. Like, that was a huge concern with me when it came to him. It, like, cut down on the turnovers, if anything, especially in the NBA. Because usually that does transfer over from college. If you were turnover prone in college basketball, a lot of times you were turnover prone in the NBA a lot more.
Absolutely.
But we're talking
it's probably
going
to increase.
Well,
that's going to increase.
I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that's things I would like to see him work on is the turnovers, cutting it down, progression on turning it down. Now, 15 to 17 points, I think that's definitely reasonable. I thought you were going to go – when you said expectations, I thought you were going to go up as high as, like, 23, 24 points a night. I thought that's a lot for a guy who's, what, how old is he, 20? I mean, that's my guess.
Like, I think he's 20 years old.
That is a lot. I mean, to me, a guy – like – he has scoring ability, but a guy coming into the league like Kevin Durant when he came for the Seattle Supersonics before they came to the Thunder, like, you could tell, like, he's a all-natural, you know, scorer, like a Kevin Durant. I don't see him on that kind of level. So I kind of see him more, like you said, the 15 to 17-point range. I think that's more reasonable, especially as a starting three, hybrid four throughout the game. You said about five, six rebounds. I think that's definitely reasonable for a guy that height. You said he was 6'7", 6'8". I thought he was more towards 6'8", 6'9". But that, we're splitting hairs at that point.
I think they're counting the hair on that, though.
Uh-huh.
I think they're counting that, you know, that flat, you know, that flat top, the extra inch, half an inch, inch and a half of.
Yeah, I mean, because I also see, like, this first option. I don't see that. I still think this is, like, to a degree, Tim Hardaway Jr.'s team. I still think it's his, to an extent, he has a green light. And I think Fizdale's going to try to tone that down. But I definitely can see over time, I don't even know if it's going to be this season, this become more Kevin Knox's team on offense. Like, if you was a – let me ask you this. Let me actually get to the other points. Field goal percentage, I expect them to be in, like, somewhere in the low 40s, honestly, from shooting from two. Unless he's getting to the line often, you know, getting hat, because I would love to see him shoot at least 75% from the free throw line. That, I mean, that is
reasonable.
I think with his game, with his game, he has to at least get to the line. And that's what the Knicks definitely need, a guy who's going to go to the rack. But I think there's things that he's probably working on right now as we speak, as far as his handle, going to the left, working on the one-on-ones. But until you actually play against guys on a night-in and night-out basis outside of the Summer League. Summer League is one thing. He was better than a lot of those guys in the Summer League. But when you play up against perennial all-stars almost a night-in, night-out basis, I got to see that as far as how he's going to take that mentally and carry that into year two, because I'm looking far further ahead than most Knicks fans. Let me ask you this. How do you think his game will be on a two-man game level? Like, you see him working a pick-and-roll or pick a screen, pick and pop. Like, how do you see his game on that level, Av?
I think he's more of a pick and roll kind of guy. I think at least at first he's gonna utilize a lot of the pick, the two man pick and roll. I can see him running screens with Burke and Neal Aquina, especially since he has that familiarity a little bit with Neal Aquina from the Summer League and throughout workouts. So I can see him becoming that perennial pick and roll type player, at least for the first half of the season, with slowly gradually improving his shot, and then he can become that or the occasional spot up shooter. But that remains to be seen. He has to really work on that, because like you said, you didn't really see that too much in Kentucky. If you happen to really scour YouTube and find some of his high school stuff when he was an All-American, then you would be able to see that, yes, he does have a shot. Of course, you compare that with the Summer League. He does have some shots, so he can be a pick-and-pop kind of player. However, I think that the Knicks need to come back to basics and be the pick-and-roll and really utilize that and at the same time utilize that with Hardaway, because when Hardaway does go to the rack, he does get to the line. He does draw attention. So I like to see that two-man game with both those guys, because I think that both of them, going down the hole, into the paint and really drawing some contact and getting to the line would really just alleviate a lot of the pressure off of Enes Kanter and a lot of the Knicks big men, especially Mitchell Robinson, who we're expecting also a lot of big things for going. But then again, it all depends on how Fizdale plays him as well.
So you're saying pick and roll, pick and pop with Hardaway Jr. Did you say Trey Burke? Did I catch that right?
Trey Burke mostly, because Burke is kind of that player. Uh-huh. But I can definitely see him working that role with Neal Aquina, since he has familiarity with him. I'm curious to see how he actually works with Moutier. I'm not a big fan of Moutier, I don't like the fact that he's a Knick. However, he is a Knick, so I want to see how those two work, because we all know Moutier doesn't have a shot. So if you can play that back and forth game between those two and really get that cohesion working, that's something that's going to be useful, because now the Knicks are getting a lot of more easy buckets and a lot more easy points on the line. That's just something that the Knicks need to improve on, because they were really horrible at that as well.
Yeah, pick and roll. I don't know if I see him in that light, but definitely pick and pop. Absolutely, I definitely see that. I could when I vision this in my head, it's like certain plays call, the coach calls a play for the point guard. More so, I trust Trey Burke more than I trust Emmanuel Moody, and I think we both can agree to that. So I could definitely see pick and pop, Trey Burke and Kevin Knox on a pick and pop. I think that could be very effective, especially for Trey Burke's benefit. Because that would probably create more space for him to a little bit of separation, because Trey Burke really likes to get that 1 or 2 second space and do that little pull up, 15-foot jumper. And he would take it to the rack if he has it there, if it's there. But as far as Kevin Knox is definitely capable on that pick and pop, because he has a good jump shot, good form, and he could get in a lot of rhythm with a player like Trey Burke. I definitely do not see with the other guards like Emmanuel Moutier, Frank Neal Aquina. So guys like that, they're going to play opposite on up, just waiting for ball rotation. So I that's how I see that. Two-man game, I think the two-man game, he should be fine. But what about one-on-one? You feel that he's capable? I don't know. I have to think of all the forwards. Let's say Jason Tatum, for instance, the Celtics forward. You see him one-on-one taking him to the rack on a night in and night out basis? Or what about Ben Simmons? Or what about Otto Porter from the Wizards? What about I'm trying to think of other forwards in the East. Kawhi Leonard. Do you see him going up against these guys and on a one-on-one basis? I don't really see it like that. You know what you?
I don't see that either. Especially since most of the guys that you mentioned are above average defenders and above average one-on-one defenders. I can see if possessions, you know, here and there, like, you know, they might give up on one play just to get them back on the other one, but I don't see that on a consistent basis. But then again, you're only going to see those guys for like a quarter of the season, as opposed to when you're playing against, you know, the lonely teams, like the Bulls teams or, you know, somebody like, you know, the Hornets or something like that, or Orlando, you know, where you don't really have, you know, that definitive 3-4 guys down there, you know, that can play defense, that can stay with them. I can see him beating a lot of guys off the dribble. Like for me personally, this is just my freaking, you know, my kind of like dream situation is whenever we play the Rockets, and I want to see him go one-on-one with Melo. I just want to see that because I think that, you know, Knox can be similar to Melo in a lot of ways if he develops his game correctly and pick up a lot of the good things that Melo does do, which is, you know, beat guys off the dribble, jab step, and big guys out, and bully them a little bit. But at the same time, learn from that by, you know, still being able to have that peripheral vision and that great court vision to be able to see passing lanes develop because you're going on the isolation, especially on the left side. And then, you know, and distribute the ball. That's something that I want to see because I look at Kevin Knox and I can see, and a lot of times I sometimes – you know, in just, you know, little bits and pieces, there are some pieces of Melo's game that develop. I see a lot of Dwayne Wade in him, not just the player in comparison, but certain styles of how he plays. But I'm not seeing him, you know, taking Kawhi Leonard off the dribble all the time. I'm not seeing him doing that to DeRozan. I'm not seeing that doing, definitely not seeing him do that to Durant that often, unless Durant's on, you know, on an off night and you know his knees is hurting him or something. But I can see him beating most 3-4s on a more routine basis. And then when you get those big premier games, those big matchup games against the LeBrons, against the Durants, against, you know, the guys you just mentioned, those are going to be, you know, more the nights where you see him, you know, pop that shot and really try to, you know, showcase the fact that he can shoot the ball. And then occasionally, on a couple of possessions, take your man to the hole. But I think I'm in perfect agreement with you on that one. But I still think of him because of his athleticism, I can still see him and how, you know, he's tall, he's lengthy, and he, you know, and I mean, you just do Google images, you see a couple of highlight dunks here and there. I can see him taking guys to the hole and beating them off the dribble and you know, taking full advantage of creating a poster shot. I think that's what he's going to try to do, especially in the early onset of the season, is to create that, you know, that Knicks poster shot for every Knicks fan to make them, you know, to be that desktop wallpaper for everybody for the next couple of months until Porzingis does come back.
What about defensively? He's kind of harped up about it publicly all summer long. And as far as playing defense, do you think he has it in him? Until we actually see, do you think he has it in him?
I think he has it in him. I just don't know if he has conscientious enough of him knowing that you have to be consistent, because that's the one thing that, you know, the Knicks have lacked for a number of years is consistency, getting that consistent effort night in and night out. Now, I'm not saying that on a blowout loss, if you're down 25 already in the second quarter, that you're supposed to be doing that. However, if there's a slight chance that you can get back into this game, I fully expect Kevin Knox, considering that you're a rookie, considering there's a lot of media hype, especially in this city, behind him, especially with him signing to Puma and you know, how the Knicks are all talking about, you know, next season and the free agency class of trying to attract, you know, big-time free agents. Those are the things that he kind of has to do. He kind of has to be more consistent and show not only the Knicks fans, not only the coaching staff, and us, you know, and us analytical guys that, you know, that look at that night in and night out. But he has to kind of show the NBA that, you know, that not only is he a player that you want to, that you have to look out for, but he's a guy you want to play with. He's exciting. He's, you know, he has all these things. Porzingis is already up, you know, if you believe it, the headlines, he's the guy that most players want to play with. How about if we had another one? How about we had a Kevin Knox who is dynamic and, you know, is fun to play with and creates a lot of these, you know, these feel-good moments, especially in this season. If you have that, now it makes it a whole lot easier for big-time free agents come the offseason for them to say, look, the Knicks have now two pieces, not just Porzingis, not just the fact that they have David Fizdale, who's quote-unquote the player's coach. They have a young Kevin Knox who had a phenomenal rookie season. He actually did win Rookie of the Year like he said he was going to do, and he's only going to get better. That's something that's the reason why Knicks fans are so optimistic. That's the reason why I'm a little optimistic. I don't want to consider this a throwaway season, but until I see, you know, something different, I'm kind of looking at it as one. But I'm trying to stay off.
No. I think we're missing. It seems like we're way off track. What I'm talking about defensively. Let's really look at it defensively, because we're saying things generically. Let me ask you this: drawing charges. You see him drawing a lot of charges.
No.
That he should. Okay. So let me mark that down. Drawing charges is a no. Okay, help defense. I think it's somewhat of a yes. Maybe not to the degree of KP because of KP's height, but I think he'll be fine.
I think he will. I think he definitely will have it because he has enough guys down there that know how to play help defense. They may not be as consistent as we think, but I think that he can definitely lead that charge. And the fact that they still probably have Joakim Noah in however capacity, especially in that freaking those training camps and stuff like that, I think that he can learn something. He can pick his brain a little bit in that. And Mitchell Robinson will also learn from that as well. I think that he can be definitely good on help defense. I also think he can pick a lot of pockets too.
Pick a lot of pockets.
I think he's a guy who can definitely be like he can very possibly be a two steal a night guy, but let's just be modest.
That's a lot, man.
But I think he can do it. I think he can at least do that for the first month of the season, considering our schedule.
What about if I have Kawhi? I'm thinking about the forwards in our own division. You could go DeMar Carroll. You could go Ben Simmons. Okay, put it like this. If I had Ben Simmons 15, 17 feet out, extended elbow on the free throw line, do you think he's going to be able to keep up with a Ben Simmons, Kawhi Leonard, DeMar Carroll, Jason Tatum, guys like that, or even if he's a cross matchup, Jaylen Brown? Maybe Jaylen Brown's a little too quick, but I'm looking at forwards.
Yeah, Brown.
Do you think I'm not talking to help defense. I'm talking about one-on-one slide his feet defense. It's traditional defense.
I think he can definitely beat Carroll one-on-one offensively and defensively. I think he can keep up with Carroll. With Leonard, I just don't see it. I'm sorry. Tatum,
okay.
he can keep up with Tatum for maybe about, you know, 40 or 50% of the time. But most times you're going to see Tatum, you know, kind of school him a little bit and you know, kind of make him look silly on defense at times, because I just don't know if Knox can, you know, can keep up with him speed wise. Tatum has a you know, pretty decent speed, great footwork, and knows how to, you know, shake guys off. Simmons, that's kind of a toss up. I mean, that's like, because Simmons doesn't have the greatest shot. So one on one, you know, he can keep up with him on the outside. If Simmons gets that drop step on him, Simmons beats him to the rack. So that's the thing. If Simmons is looking to shoot, I think Knox can hang with him, and contest the shot, you know, 7 out of 10 times. But I just don't see him beating him on a consistent basis, because Simmons does, you know, does have a quick first step and he can get the hole. All right. I think that's everybody.
All right. Hold on. You gotta get it to a quiet spot. I hear dogs barking, man. Let's move on. All right. Let's get to Courtney Lee. Do you see any adequate time for Courtney Lee? I know his name has come up multiple times on prior episodes, but he was never the focus on those episodes. Now we look into him. Does he have a role on this team? Do you see him having a role on the 2018-19 Knicks, Courtney Lee?
To be honest, I just don't see how Courtney Lee and this is based on last year's performance, because Lee, to me, really dropped the ball, considering that the year before he wasn't that great to begin with. I think he kind of digressed a lot last season. He had a couple of, a couple of good games, but honestly, something I'm really starting to regret, and I believe it's Chandler that can't stand him sometimes, I'm having a hard time with him sometimes. I really can't do it. So I don't know if he really does have a prominent role. I definitely don't see him going towards the future. I'm seeing him as trade bait going forward. But this season, I think it would be the wise thing to do is to play Courtney Lee just to bring his stock up in order for him to be trade bait, come the February deadline.
All right, that's what's up. He should have been gone, and there was no knock on him. It was just the direction of where the team was going. A veteran player like him should have been on somewhat of a playoff-playing team last year, somebody's roster last year, and he should have been gone last year. So I don't see him – it's almost like a catch-22. He's almost in that situation like Noah, but on a guard level, where he's a veteran, not as injury-prone, but just finding adequate minutes, because you want to see more of the younger guys get more burn. The Knicks are not a ready to win now squad, so he's going to be frustrated. And I know him going to be on the bench, not in somewhat of a Jared Jack role, is not pretty much. It's not really his style. That's not really Courtney Lee. Courtney Lee could somewhat still play, but I don't think he fits what the Knicks are trying to do, because what they've really been harping on, even since last year and off season, they wanted to be more athletic. They wanted to be more up and down. Courtney Lee is not that at this point of his career, so I don't see that. So I don't know how I just see him on the. I mean, it's no really no point getting him cheap minutes unless you're going to showcase him to get him traded. I don't see that in a Courtney Lee. I really, really don't. And it's hard to say because he's been pretty much a decent veteran in this league for about over a decade at this point.
Right.
I don't know, because he's – okay, Tim Hardaway Jr. is starting as shooting guard. See, in Hornacek's lineup, as you already know, they went small, so it was easy to play three guards and put him in there, and especially in the event when Hardaway Jr. got hurt. But I could do – let's put it like this. When Hardaway Jr. does get hurt, because I don't see Hardaway Jr. really playing 82 games, I mean, then you're going to see a lot more Courtney Lee. You know what I'm saying? I see him in that situation, you know?
Yeah, I definitely see that. Courtney Lee is – He's underutilized and he's a little underachieving for my taste, and frankly, he's the kind of guy that needs to be on a playoff contending team. I can see him in a place like Portland or Memphis or even the Lakers at this point. Those are the kind of teams that I think that Courtney Lee would be best suited, just because that spot up shooter. He's traditionally he's a 3-and-D guy. But he's also a great guy to have in the locker room, so that's the benefit that the Knicks do have with him. But in terms of where he fits in this offense and what you're trying to accomplish, featuring these young guys and moving towards the future, the only thing that Courtney Lee is for is, like I said, trade bait, and I think that's the only thing that you really can do with Courtney Lee. He just doesn't fit in at least in my perception of what the overall goal is with the Knicks and their future. I'm not saying he's an old guy or he's a bad guy to have. He just doesn't fit. You're trying to feature, you know, Kevin Knox. You want to feature, you know, Neil Aquino more. You know, you're definitely going to feature Porzingis when he gets back. You want to feature some, you're still going to feature Enes Kanter for the time being until, you know, as long as he's still on this roster. I don't foresee it going, you know, past this season, but hey, you know, the Knicks do weird things, you know, every day. But Courtney Lee just kind of fits in that bubble where he's still efficient, you know, for what he does. He, you know, it's not a necessarily a bad thing to have him on the court. It's just, it does, you know, it's not where the direction of the team, according to the lip service that you're getting from management, that we're going, you know, we're going to get younger, we're trying to rebuild, we're trying to do this. He's not the guy that you want to do that. And it wouldn't be fair to Courtney Lee either, considering, you know, how much they're paying him. So you would rather have him go, you know, him be on, you know, on a team that's ready to compete at least in the playoffs, you know, who could make at least a second or third, you know, second round or third round and buy-in, and then you can see where it goes from there. I don't think he'll be heavily featured on those teams, but he can be somebody that can be, you know, that can have that, you know, that great one moment just for that, for, you know, just for those teams. It just, I don't see that happening for the Knicks. Not when you have Hardaway, not when you have Knox, not when you have, you know, the all the point guards that we have. We still have Ron Baker on the team, and I mean. You kind of have to figure all those other pieces, and that just, and that kind of leaves Courtney Lee to be the odd man out.
Well, not even there's a name. I don't think you did bring him up, but I probably didn't catch it. Behind Tim Hardaway Jr., you would think it would be Courtney Lee, but like we said on other episodes, Frank Ntilikina is probably penciled in as the hybrid number two, the two guard. Because we don't see him as this comfortable one guard, so there the logjam even hurts even more in the Courtney Lee case. Because even if he was to play behind Hardaway Jr., you're trying to get more out of Frank Ntilikina at this point. Like we said, when the Knicks are not in a win now mode, and I think we all agree with this. Whether you're on the executives, the coaching, the fans, the Knicks need to start from ground up, and you need to see what you have in these young players. Because Courtney Lee, at this point of his career, is just kind of just like he's Jared Jack in a sense. So getting him playing time is really going to be hard, man. And it's not because they can't go small, because if we believe the lip service, Kevin Knox has got to be your starter day one, right? Kevin Knox is your starter, right? He's not coming off the bench, right?
I just personally don't see it. But then again, don't know. I don't see that at all, but at the same time, I don't know what Fizdale's going to do.
Who would you have?
I agree with you. I don't see Kevin Knox coming off the bench. I see him starting. I think my starters are Tim Hardaway at the two, Knox at the three, Hinzonja at the four, Kanter at the five, and the one.
Yeah, Moutier or Burke.
I see them starting Emmanuel Mudiay, I think that Fizdale has it in for this kid and really wants to, you know, to like develop him and make him, you know, a much more improved player. I think Mudiay has become Fizdale's pet project.
Right. I definitely can see that, man. Absolutely. But
what's crazy though, Steve, is that, you know, we're talking about all these players, and we really haven't really thought who's your 10th, 11th, and 12th man on the squad. I mean,
do you really want to go that deep with a young team, or you don't care? You really still want to run a 10, 12 man rotation?
I mean, personally, considering that you're not in the win now mode, I think 12 guys is, you know, playing 12, 13 guys is not bad, considering that you're not in win now. But if saying, you know, after 20 games, the Knicks are like, you know, 10-10 and it seems feasible, maybe you start shortening it up and get, you know, and kind of like define the roles. But until then, going 10 to 12 guys is not unheard of. I mean, I see even, you know, the Boston Celtics go 10 or 12 deep. I've seen the Spurs go 10 or 12 deep. I've seen the Raptors at very odd moments go 10 or 12 deep. But when I say that, it's like I don't know who Fizdale has at that bottom of, you know, you're going to have 15 to start, you know, to start the preseason. So by the time opening day, it's going to be cut down to about 13 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think in my back of my head, who are going to be those 13 or 12 teams? I'm pretty sure Ron Baker is going to be on one of them. I don't know who will be the next. I'm afraid it might be Cornette. As much as we all like him, I'm afraid he's gonna probably end up being in that spot. And then
okay.
Who else is gonna be in that spot? I mean,
yeah.
You know, unfortunately, you know, I really do fear that Trey Burke might end up in that spot. Even though, like you said, and like we all said, we see Neal Aquino becoming more of a two than a one. But then again, we don't know what Fizdale wants to, him to really work on, his handle or his shot. Or is it a combination of both? Or do you want him to become that hybrid? That's going to be interesting because Trey Burke is already kind of a hybrid. So what do you do?
I always saw Trey Burke as a one, although he could play the two. Like, Trey Burke has enough handle to carry the one load. He probably is the best one we have, including Moutier. You know what I mean? That's not saying much. But
no,
Trey
not,
Burke, you
but
saw
you're
the way,
absolutely right.
You saw the way Trey Burke took over games once he came up from Westchester. You know, the guy could take over games. He could go out for a scoring, like he carried the team scoring on that, and he will get the occasional assist in the paint. But yeah, you're right. Now, as far as Neal Aquino, you're right. If he's going to be the two, it's a common sense. If he's going to play a more two, he's got to work on the shot, and that's what the Knicks coaches have got him working on right now as we speak. If you're going to be – if Neal Aquino went to the coaches and be like, yo, I need to I'd rather play off the ball. I feel more comfortable. And it seemed like he was more comfortable. And you saw him on the fast breaks. He got a nice Euro step. But I'm talking about in half-court situations, he was definitely way better off the wing than running the point. There was no doubt about that. He's an old school point guard, like 1970s point guard, where he's dribble handoff, go run off the ball and do some screens. Like today's NBA,
right.
You need a point guard who could do everything, you know.
Trey
Burke could do more than that.
Fortunately, Trey Burke has a good shot, has handle, has great court vision, and so he is definitely without a doubt the best one that we have. Unfortunately, I just don't see – I mean, I would hope to have Moutier as the starting one. But then again, we don't know what – again, we don't know what Fizdale's going to do in terms of the lineup. Maybe he still sticks with Frank as the number one instead of a two. Maybe he sticks – maybe he kind of like, moves Moutier into like a two role. I don't see why, but you never know. Fizdale is a little bit more unorthodox and understands that, the traditional role of each position has, kind of branched out and become hybrids of other ones. So there's always that possibility that you'll have, a very small lineup, especially when you're playing three guards. You'll have a Moutier, Burke, and Neal Aquino all on the floor at the same time. And Lord knows if he keeps Hardaway and Knox on the floor at the same time. I mean, that's golden offense right there, but defensively it's a nightmare. I mean, you're talking about five guys who all can't defend all that well. Neal Aquino, yeah, he's probably the best defender of the bunch. However, he can't defend all five positions, especially if the opposition is going big or going traditional.
Right. All right, cool, man. Let's get into our pick two tonight. The Boston Celtics, Los Angeles Lakers, man. What's your thoughts on the Boston Celtics roster going into next year? And then also your thoughts on the Lakers, man, their roster going into next season. Is Knickerbocker Avenue there? All right. Maybe he dropped.
My bad.
There you go.
I started talking to myself again.
All good. Go far away, man.
The Boston Celtics to me are the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. I don't think that, you know, with the addition of Leonard that the Raptors will overtake them. I still see the Celtics because you know they kept the core intact, and you know they still have, you know, a great coaching staff. They still have, you know, a lot of firepower, a lot of young legs, and a lot of good, you know, good hands on that team and on that bench that, you know, they can still overthrow any Eastern Conference team, you know, including the Raptors. Because again, you don't know if Leonard's going to be 100%. You don't know, if Lowry and Leonard will get along or will be able to mesh well on the floor. So I still think they're my pick to win the East at this point in juncture. The Los Angeles Lakers, you know, with the addition of LeBron James, they're automatically a playoff team. They go from the basement to, you know, maybe the fifth floor, you know, of a 20-story building. So they have, they're going to have a lot of question marks because they did sign a lot of extra, you know, a lot of extra hands on there, a lot of extra shooters. So they'll be kind of interesting. But if anybody who knows, you know, who's been paying attention for the last 10 years, every LeBron James team almost operates identical to, you know, to the last one, to the previous, where, you know, where James is the featured piece, and you just complement them with shooters. I don't know if LA has enough shooters. I do know. They don't have enough shooters, no matter how many more they sign. I think they signed like 30 of them. But you can sign as many shooters as you can. They're just not going to be able to compete with the upper echelon teams in the West, i.e. the Golden State Warriors, the Houston Rockets, or even the San Antonio Spurs. I mean, they're going to have a hard enough time just getting out of their own division, let alone trying to get, you know, trying to make anywhere any kind of noise in the playoffs. I see them as a fourth or fifth seed. They'll be battling Memphis probably, more than likely, or Portland. For that spot, you can't forget New Orleans. I still think them, you know, to be a playoff threat, but I think that, you know, for the first time in about 8 or 9 years, we're going to say that the NBA Finals will not feature LeBron James in that matchup, and I think that's a breath of fresh air.
All right, now, on the Boston Celtics, from my perspective, I mean, it's really hard. It's like when you make these points or your point of views, your opinions, it's like I try to make a case for other teams against the obvious. The Boston Celtics right now are the obvious. I think they have gained a lot of intangible collateral with the injuries that they sustained. We saw Gordon Hayward get hurt in that first game of the year last year, right? And we saw Kyrie Irving in pretty much similar fashion. Obviously not similar fashion because he didn't break no foot or nothing. But I'm talking about Kyrie Irving is injury prone. But they kind of grown without them. You know what I'm saying? It's like they got better playing without them. It's kind of almost, in a sense, what our team needs to be in a way without Kristaps Porzingis. Can we grow without arguably our best player? But I'm not saying Kristaps Porzingis is good as Kyrie Irving. I'm not going to go that far. But we saw the growth of Terry Rozier. I thought Terry Rozier was a pretty good college player. NBA player, nice backup, but he played so well that he could be a free agent and probably get a nice little, you know, piece of change as far as kind of like an Eric Bledsoe, almost like a poor man's Eric Bledsoe in a way. Terry Rozier played very well for them in the second half of the year and also in the playoffs, surprising a lot of people. But he played with a lot of confidence, and that goes to with Kyrie Irving not there. Jason Tatum is another one because of Gordon Hayward being out pretty much all year. Literally all year. Jason Tatum, coming from Duke, got to get a lot of valuable minutes on the fly, and that really helped him. I knew he had it in him, but I didn't think he had that in him last year. Those two players in particular are the reason why a lot of people are favoring the Boston Celtics, and then you add on the Kyrie Irving, you add on Gordon Hayward. But let me ask you this. Do you think there's potential chemistry issues that could if Rozier probably definitely earned the minutes, do you think that's going to bother the chemistry? Let's say Jason Tatum's on the floor, or he wants to be on the floor, or Gordon Hayward wants to be on the floor. He was a proven player in Utah for a couple of years and gets a big contract. Do you see situations where one or two of those guys wants to be on the floor and they can't because the other guy is, and if they're fully healthy, you think that could cause chemistry issues? What's your thoughts on that?
I don't see that becoming chemistry issues because the players that he's going to be competing against, everybody for the exception of Kyrie Irving, and even Kyrie to a certain extent, they're not that type of player where, you know, they're going to be jockeying for minutes. Gordon Hayward kind of has to work his way back up, you know, from that, you know, from that gruesome leg injury. And he's going to have to, like, work himself back into the rotation and into the chemistry and the flow of the team. So I don't see Terry Rozier having to compete for minutes that much with, you know, especially with Tatum, knowing what, you know, what Tatum can do and what more he can develop on. You know, in what is it now, year two, I forget. And I don't see that happening with the Boston Celtics. I think the Celtics are right now a very well-oiled machine, very coached, very manageable. And I think that the guys are
oiled machine.
Know what? I think they're an oiled machine. I think they're a well-oiled machine, the Boston Celtics. I think that they know who they are. They know where their roles are, and going forward, I don't see them having any kind of chemistry issues, for the exception of Kyrie Irving and because of the situation of his contract coming up next year. I think that's the only big thing you're going to be hearing about, you know, pretty much the entire season. I don't see Rozier having a problem. I don't see Hayward having a problem. I don't see Tatum having a problem. I don't see any of those guys. The biggest question mark with the Boston Celtics to me is Kyrie Irving and his future. But if you're talking about the season, I don't see a problem.
So they're in the finals for you. Finals versus who? Golden State? I mean, that's kind of like the – or you see a new up-and-comer in the West. Who
you know what?
You have Boston coming out of the East. Who do they win the championship if they come out the East? How far you
playing,
got?
Oh, well, I have them winning the East. To me, I'm penciling the Boston Celtics to win the Eastern Conference, and they'll probably end up playing against Golden State. Golden State is a little older, is a little slower, and you saw them to be more human. You know. Come back to earth a little bit in last season, despite the fact that they swept the NBA Finals. But then again, look at their opponent. But I still don't see Houston overcoming them. Even with the addition of Carmelo Anthony, I just don't see it. I think that, you know, the Melo move was kind of a bad. It might come back and bite them like it bit Oklahoma City. It's not that Melo's a bad addition. It's just I don't see how you're going to be able to share the ball, you know, that much with Harden, with Paul, with Melo, and that whole trio. And then you don't know if D'Antoni and Melo have really buried the hatchet yet. Who knows? I'm sure that they're telling the press, you know, that they have, but it's only going to be a matter of time. And I just don't see anybody else in the West. I mean, San Antonio's not, they're not up there anymore. I mean, you know, they're probably the third or fourth best team.
Mm-hmm.
LA definitely. LA is definitely. New Orleans is still about a player short. ascending into the top elite teams of the Western Conference. So I still see it in Boston and Golden State and the NBA Finals.
Boston, Golden State. All right, now my opinion on the Lakers. You're right. They're going to probably make the playoffs somewhere in around the five or six. Well, about five. I'll give them a five seed. I don't think they're going to be great. I don't think they're going to be bad. And of course, LeBron going into the West is the main reason why they do make the playoffs. They don't make it without him, but they definitely make it with him. But you're right. There's not enough shooters. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a good shooter, not a great shooter, but a good, respectable shooter. That's the best word I can say. He's a respectable shooter, but not a great shooter. But with LeBron, you need to be great at shooting. So you're asking Rajon Rondo to be a shooter? No, no, that's not. See, LeBron needs the ball in his hands. We all know that. His teams historically on Cleveland and Miami, they go as far as he takes them, as far as, because he does what he does best. He goes to the hole. I mean, he attacks the rim. I mean, that's what's so great about LeBron is he attacks the rim. But when he attacks the rim, he's going to look for kickout shooters. You don't have anybody on this team as good as a shooter like Kyrie Irving. Kyle Korver, or even on the Miami teams like Mike Miller, Chalmers. There's none of those guys like that on the LA Lakers right now. Brandon Ingram is not a knockdown shooter. Kyle Kuzma is not really a knockdown shooter. Josh Hart is a decent player, had a good summer league, not really a knockdown shooter. So they're going to struggle with shooting the ball. I mean, I don't think they were even great shooting the ball last year. I think they were at the bottom of the league. But they do have athletes, though. They have athletes. They're going to get up and down. Brandon Ingram is a long, lanky type of forward, and I think him and LeBron could play off each other. I think Brandon Ingram's game is going to take a step up where it needs to be. And they could play a little bit of defense. You still got Rondo. You got Lance Stephenson. They got him on the one-year deals. And I know they got a gang of cap space for next summer, so they're going to try to land some big fish and really, really make a run. So I see them, if they're a 5 seed, that means they will probably play a 4 seed. So a 4 seed sitting there probably could be a San Antonio type of team. I think they could get, you know, I think the Lakers probably, their ceiling, Av, is probably the second round in the Western Conference Finals, semifinals. What do you think?
That's what I was picking.
Okay.
I was picking because you're thinking about, if you're picking them at 5, that means that the 4 seed would be like a San Antonio, would be like a New Orleans or a Portland or something like that. You know, if they live up to the expectations that they did last year. So they're not going to be a bad team. They're going to be exciting. They're going to be heavily covered, but I just don't see them being, you know, the Western Conference champions. Not when you have so many heavyweights on that side.
Right, right. Any final thoughts from Knickerbocker Avenue, Kevin Knox, Courtney Lee, the Knicks in general, the NBA in general, the two teams we discussed tonight, and the Omni fan promos?
I definitely got Omni fan promos. I got to shout out Jennifer and Jasmine for all they do for me and everything that, you know, that they're trying to provide for the Knicks fans. But my final thought is Kevin Knox is going to be exciting. I expect some rookie woes, but I expect that, you know, for him to come out the gate and really, you know, try to put this team on his back a little bit. You'll see him press, but I think that, you know, that, you know, now a few months after the draft and we've settled down and we assess the landscape, I think the Knicks, they're taking a step forward. They can't get any lower. We've already been there. But I think Knox, I'm expecting Knox opening night to be, you know, to try to make that Sports Center highlight or be that YouTube clip that everybody wants to create a meme out of. So with that being said, I'm doing a lot of work with OmniFan, theomnifan.com. Go on their site and see about great deals for the Battle of the Boroughs, for preseason game between the Knicks and the Nets at Madison Square Garden at a very decent discounted price. And there's a buy one, get one kind of situation, or, you know, a discounted price situation for opening night. The Suite Life, you can actually, you know, join the ladies of OmniFan in a suite, on the Chase Bridge at Madison Square Garden for opening night against the Atlanta Hawks. You get to see Kevin Knox and Trae Young, and you can sit there and compare whether the Knicks made the mistake of not getting Trae Young or whether they chose right. But as always, you can follow them on Facebook and Instagram, and you can always holler at your boy Knickerbocker Av on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Bleed Blue Show is back. Great to be back. Can't wait for to start seeing some rookies, you know, some of the training camp and some of the the preseason. I can't wait for that stuff, because I'm pretty sure most of you already got your Kevin Knox jerseys, because I already looked for one and I couldn't find one anywhere. I found a lot of other ones. I found a lot of new Latinas now, which is kind of sad to hear a little bit that some people have already given up on him. But, hey, leave loose show, Sangre de Azul all day, every day. Can't wait till next week. I'm loving what I'm hearing from you guys. We're rich and proud on the rink. I promise I'll be back for a dugout session because I haven't talked Yankees in a long, long time. So I'll be back for that sooner or later. And that's it, bro. Sangre de Azul, bleed blue all day, every day.
Knickerbocker Avenue and Steve, man, signing off. Sangre de Azul, bleed blue.
Bleed blue. Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep blue, 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 bleep blue.